This is podcast number 94 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today we're talking about teaching courtesy. Courtesy. We speak of teaching courtesy to children, yet courtesy is not so much a lesson that is either taught or learned as it is a result of the successful teaching of certain other lessons, notably the lessons of kindness and self-control. For courtesy is something more than good manners, even very good manners. It is a state of good feeling, so disciplined that it can and does unfailingly express itself in good manners. As someone has wisely said, manners may, and often do, come from the lips alone, but courtesy comes always from the heart. In order to help children to become courteous, a full understanding of what courtesy is should never be absent from the mind of the teacher. And as soon as the child can receive it understandingly, it should always be clearly in the mind of the child. This is the more important for the reason that while courtesy is of slow and sometimes difficult growth, good manners flourish with rapid ease. Children are still very young indeed when they almost automatically say please, thank you, and excuse me. So habituated have they already become to mere good manners. When a little older, the boys make their bows and the girls drop their curtsies almost absent-mindedly, so quickly and with such facility are the motions of good manners learned. Of course, these good-mannered children may also be courteous children, but unfortunately, it does not necessarily follow. Courtesy must come as a result, first of vision and then of discipline. Where shall the children's eyes be turned that they may see this vision? How shall they obtain the necessary discipline? The first question is easily answered. In the stories of the heroes and heroines of the old legendary tales, the children will find the vision. As for discipline, this they can obtain only by a constant effort on the part of their teachers and parents to connect the children's readings of the old hero tales with their daily lives, lives in which the necessity for courtesy is ever present. In the cases of some children, growth in courtesy will result from a mere familiarity with the stories, without other aid. But most children, perhaps, need to be helped by reminders from their elders. There are no heroes and heroines in the great world of literature more perfectly embodying courtesy than the knights and ladies of the Round Table. A knowledge, nay, a deep and full familiarity with the tales of the Round Table is the heritage of every boy and girl. Not only the imaginative children, but the more matter-of-fact as well, are able to see in these stories what true courtesy is. I have known many a dreamy boy and girl who learned the meaning of courtesy from King Arthur and his knights. But it was only very recently that I chanced to discover that for prosaic children as well, the stories have their full value. A boy of 10, one of my neighbors, had learned, as have most children of his age, that it is polite to offer to carry the bag or parcel of any woman whom he may be accompanying. More than this, it has been the custom of his mother, when an overnight or weekend guest was leaving, to send the boy with the guest to the streetcar to carry the inevitable bag. The boy has performed this service without any special graciousness, though never with murmuring, but only at the suggestion of his mother each time the situation arose. The mother has occasionally spoken to me about the boy's manners, saying more than once, "I have no trouble making him behave courteously, but I am afraid he has no natural courteous feeling. Courteous actions he does more because he is obedient than because he is polite." One Saturday morning not long ago, when the mother knew that the boy was especially eager to be out at his play, there was an overnight guest who wished to go, not a short distance to the streetcar, but to the home of another friend several long blocks away. She asked the boy how far it was, and through what street she should go in order to reach it. Before the boy's mother could say, as she ordinarily did on similar occasions, "Edwin will go with you and carry your bag," the boy himself spoke. "I will show you the way and take along your bag. I'd like to." He said it, his mother told me, with the first courteousness, in a large sense, with which he had ever said anything. When the moment came to start, the boy's father, who had brought the guest's bag downstairs, remarked as his son picked it up, the guest being for the moment out of hearing, It's rather heavy for you. I wish I had time to take it. I don't mind it being a little heavy. I'm glad to take it, the boy replied, again with this newly acquired courteous tone. The mother did not question her son. Indeed, she supposed that her talks on the subject of courtesy had at last borne fruit. Very soon, however, she discovered the real source of her boy's growth in courtesy. She came upon her son reading and asked him what it was he read. The story of Sir Lucan, the boy said. He died helping to carry King Arthur when both of them were wounded, he worse, and he didn't say anything about the king being too heavy for him. This is what King Arthur said about it. Alas, he would not complain him. His heart was so set to help me. The boy looked at his mother with a new light in his matter-of-fact young eyes. I get awfully sick of carrying bags for the people who come here, he remarked. But I guess I can stand it. It isn't likely to kill me as it did Sir Lucan carrying King Arthur. He was glad to do it. The boy's mother, in telling me this, observed that it would never have occurred to her to find an analogy between the two cases. But there are children, many of them, who make for themselves not only such analogies as we might make, but also those it never would have occurred to us to think of making. He was one such. Courtesy in relationship to grown-ups. Children are apt to grow to this sooner than to courtesy between themselves. The reason, perhaps, is that grown-ups bear one half, at least, of the responsibility. Not only do they set the example themselves of courtesy, but they can and do, as it were, begin it first. In the dealings of children with one another, this great aid is lacking. One is usually no better qualified than another to set the example or to take the initiative. It is not so alarming as it sometimes appears to persons making the acquaintance of children in large groups for the first time that boys and girls are so frequently lacking in courtesy to one another. Parents and teachers, perhaps particularly teachers, are accustomed to the situation and try in various ways to meet it, first by personal example, of course. This is valuable, but excepting with very little children, it is less potent than an example of more heroic proportions and a higher degree of glamour. In the old hero tales, such examples are to be freely found. It is usually in the heat of a contest that the lack of courtesy in boys and girls is apt to appear. But fortunately, the very children who enjoy games of competition also like to read of tournaments. In one such story of the Knights of the Round Table, The Lady of the Fountain, there is an account of a contest waged furiously and yet courteously. At the end of this contest, which lasted for 3 days, continuing every day until the evening, there was a memorable scene. Its words, as well as its spirit, should be given to every child, especially such children as like competitive sports. Said Gawain, "Thou, Owain, art the victor. Take thou my sword." And with that Arthur saw that they were conversing and advanced towards them. "My lord Arthur," said Gawain, "here is Owain who has vanquished me and will not take away my arms." "My lord," said Owain, "it is he that has vanquished me, and he will not take my sword." The influence of this passage is incalculable upon children as a force to impel them to courteous feelings and actions one to another when engaged in competitive sports or games. I have seen a number of instances of this, two being especially striking. One of these had to do with a group of girls in my neighborhood who have a self-organized and self-directed basketball team. The girls are too young to take part in this game at school, or to be admitted to the school basketball team, but they were not too young to acquire a basketball and other apparatus and to practice the game on the large back lawn of one of their number. Neither were they too young to learn the principal rules of the game. What they were too young to do was to play it, in exciting moments, without disputes, sometimes reaching the point of unjust accusations of unfairness. The mothers of these girls, while pleased to have them interested in so healthy an outdoor sport, were much distressed, not only by the bickerings of the girls when at play, but by the recriminations of one another between games. One of the mothers, a kindergartner before her marriage, solved the problem. She was a firm believer in the potency of the story in teaching fundamental truths to children. Quite definitely, she cast about for just the right story to meet the problem, and found it in this very account of the combat between Gawain and Owain. It was her habit to read aloud to her daughter for a short time each evening, and to talk with the girl about the thing read. One evening she read this tale. Finding her daughter deeply and eagerly interested, she seized the opportunity to emphasize not only the persistence and courage of the two knights in doing their uttermost and their best to win, but also the good feeling and the fair speaking that obtained between them. "You see," she observed, "neither of them insisted upon his own victory, but each said of the other, 'It is he that has vanquished me.' They were both so kind, so self-controlled, as well as so valiant and powerful." Remarking that her daughter listened with interest and understanding, the mother ventured to add with a grave smile, "I do not see why you girls cannot play basketball in the same spirit. You are like Gawain and Owain in everything else you do in playing it, excepting in just that." The girl flushed a little bit, but said nothing, and her mother wisely turned to another story and another subject. But the unpleasantness that had characterized the basketball games diminished, and then ceased. The girl had done what grown-ups do when associating with children. She had set an example of courtesy, and had begun it first. Very likely, too, she talked with at least some of her companions regarding it. All that she said to her mother, when the change in the spirit and action of the basketball team was mentioned with affectionate satisfaction, was, "I saw from that story you read that good sports are polite. Some of the other girls thought so too, and the rest were willing enough." The other instance was that of two children, a brother and sister, in the habit of playing quieter competitive games, particularly checkers, with very much the same resultant circumstances as those which occurred in the case of the basketball players. At the end of the game, there was invariably an argument as to the victor, each child claiming the victory. The father solved the problem by telling this same story, and evening after the story was told, saying to the children, smilingly but warningly, when a dispute either began or seemed imminent, "Remember Gawain and Owain." And gradually the children did remember, and remembering became as truly courteous as those two noble knights. Of course, children are early told that courtesy is but another name for kindness, indeed, but another name for love itself. In many a story they will see this deep truth set forth. Perhaps in none will they find it with such poignancy as in the story of Siegfried's youth. That hero, when he had done wrong, did not try to excuse himself, but falling at his mother's feet and hiding his face in his hands, he said the sight of her tears cut him to the heart, and for the future he vowed that his deeds should be those of a gentle knight. Thus did Siegfried resolve. The story goes on to tell how he kept his resolve, how he strove to learn how to act wisely and well. More significantly still is it related that whenever he felt one of his old fits of passion coming over him, he thought of his mother's tears and conquered the evil spirit that threatened to master him. To the thoughtful child, this story can be made to furnish the most potent of incentives and help toward that true courtesy which strives to be gentle and to do gently, and at the same time strives to learn how to be still more gentle and to do still more gently. Courtesy to grown-ups, themselves courteous, perhaps children learn this first. Next, they learn courtesy to one another, the chances being that all are equal in their courteous contributions to the courteous whole. But perhaps the most important vision and discipline in courtesy that the children must be given is courtesy to the discourteous, to the intentionally as well as to the unintentionally rude and unkind. The hero, who above all others in the storybook world is a shining example to youth in this particular, is Oliver, that hero from whom the boys and girls learn so many great lessons. Courteous always, Oliver's courtesy to the pagan knight told in How Firebras Defied King Charles is high indeed. What was it that Oliver did when he saw this knight determined to fight him? The story tells us. So Oliver armed him. Was ever such courtesy in this world, Oliver helping this pagan to arm? Surely there never was, and no readers will be more quick to realize this than children. To refrain from unkind action, whether intended or thoughtless, to practice kindness, not only unconsciously but from principle, to learn not only to say and to do, but to think only that which is gentle. All this is comprised in the meaning of the word courteous. And all this is, of course, nothing more or less than the golden rule. For this it is, when we train the children in courtesy, that we are instilling in them to do unto others as they would that others should do unto them.